And good evening and welcome to KRBD's Politics Now with your hosts Bob and Kyle. That's Bob Weinstein, former mayor of the city of Ketchikan, Democrat, and Kyle Johansson, former representative, Republican. I'm Deb Turnbull. I'm the button pusher and the rule maker.
And she's mean.
No.
Hi Deb. Hi, Kyle.
I understand I'm not mean enough, but I'll work on that. This is a call-in show, and before we get going, I want to remind everyone about those numbers. If you're in Ketchikan or Saxman or Metlakatla, 225-9655, Prince of Wales Island, or if you're streaming from somewhere in the state of Alaska, 1-800-557-5723. And if you're streaming out of state, it's 1-907-225-9655. And we have two rules. Two rules are no profanity and no name calling. And last but not least, the views and opinions expressed on this program this evening are not the views and opinions of the KRBD staff, the KRBD Board of Directors, and most of the KRBD membership. Yeah. It's your show, guys.
Well, so great. Good evening.
Good evening.
So I think we'll start, if it's okay with Kyle. Deb had mentioned that there was an email from a listener, maybe out in Prince of Wales Island.
Yes.
So why don't we just dispose of that? His question was...
Hey, wait. We had disposed of it, but I think it leads into Ward Cove, the city of Ward Cove,
okay,
maybe, because it has to do with boroughs and the
Sure, why don't we follow up with that? Yeah, that's a great idea. So this listener was wondering what our thoughts were on the possibility of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough annexing Prince of Wales Island into the borough. And I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on that question because I've heard rumors of that over the last few years.
Yep.
In part, concern came up because of potential mine development out in Prince of Wales. And at least every elected official in the borough that I ever discussed that with said, no, no way, not under consideration. And it would be extraordinarily controversial.
Well wait a minute. First of all, the elected officials may say no, but usually those aren't the people running the show. I mean, come on, the managers, the city and borough manager, especially when your borough manager is a former local boundary commission executive director for 35 years. He was the only one they had forever. There's a lot of people that are afraid because they hear it.
Right.
And
in the borough did also annex
right. Sure.
An area, you know, the rest of the island or whatever out of the unorganized borough.
Well, it's interesting because here's the deal. There are proposals on Prince of Wales from many of the communities. They're talking about what it would be like to have a borough, and Prince of Wales fits like an ideal borough model under the Constitution, right?
Right.
I mean, you administered
right.
things
right.
over there. You're
right.
more familiar than I am.
So, yeah, I mean, it could happen. Well, let me just say, if a borough happens, my prediction will be the people of Prince of Wales decide it's in their best interest for a lot of different reasons to do that. I don't think it will be Ketchikan borough making any effort whatsoever to
annex. I don't know. I don't know. I think Prince of Wales might do it just so they don't get annexed, because once that money starts flowing, if those two mines get going, and once the money starts rolling and Ketchikan sees the tax money that could possibly, it's the same thing that happened with Walmart and Shoreline Drive. Like, Walmart was outside the city limits. Bob remembers this. When Walmart was built, they built it outside the city limits so that the city wouldn't have to get the taxes. Well, the city will go ahead and said, yeah, well, we're just going to draw a line around Walmart, and we're going to include Shoreline, too, because there's a
line. No, actually, that's not what the city said. But
no, that's what they said. Oh, you were the mayor at the time,
no,
so
no,
it might
no.
be a
The original
subject.
Proposal was a strip annexation going up the highway and getting the Walmart property, the Shoreline
but
board.
But the reason was...
The Shoreline board went to the assembly and
okay.
said, tell
okay.
the city to take all or none.
Okay.
We got enough to talk about without getting... I want to talk...
What's important?
You mentioned Ward Cove. Let's get into Ward Cove. So do you want to start with that?
I want to end with Prince of Wales first.
Okay.
I think it's valid. I think that, as I said, when you're out there, I think that's a good reason, because people over in Prince of Wales see what happens over here, aggressive annexation, and I think they get worried. Okay, now we're done.
Okay. So why don't we,
Let's
since you said morph into Ward Cove.
Yeah, folks might have seen probably or heard most likely that some folks out north are putting together a proposal to create a new city and another government within the borough.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Kyle?
Well, on its face, I was shocked that North Tongass, which is generally considered pretty conservative and anti-government, at least the people that I talk out, they're not anti-government, not like they're militiamen or something. But, you know, most people live out in the borough because they don't want to deal with the city. They don't want to deal with that. They want to have a little self-determination. And then, so at first it was like, wow, that's odd. And then I think the two sponsors, who were the sponsors?
Well, the petitioner is an elected official, Trevor Shaw.
Trevor Shaw and a former...
And then I think Jason Harris, a former council member, may be an,
yes. See?
An alternate representative. But according to the newspaper, and I guess this is where I start wondering, as a certain letter to the editor said, that you have, depending on their involvement, two or three elected officials. You have Trevor Shaw, Glenn Thompson. I'm not sure if John Harrington was or was not involved. The paper said one thing. I've heard other things. And the borough manager and other public officials involved in the development of this to certain extents. And we don't know the extent for one reason. This was done in secret by public officials, maybe acting as in their private capacities, but this petition had no public involvement whatsoever. On the one hand, you or Deb or the guy walking up the door could do a petition for a new city, annexation, consolidation, get it up to the local boundary commission. People right. have the right to do that. They'll consider it under their processes. But when you have elected officials working, possibly using their influence or possibly not, we don't know because nobody knows what happened, with people who work for them to consult or vet the petition, it sort of seems a little strange.
It's a problem. And at the very least, I mean, I think they should be able to do it. I don't think you should restrict anybody to do that. But was there any disclosure? That's the key thing. If people know about it, I mean, then people know. Like if people know that, let's use, we'll just, because I don't want to name anybody, because I don't know what, I don't know.
Right, we don't know.
So
I'm just basically commenting on what the paper says.
Assembly member X, say, is working on a petition about forming a city with the borough manager who has probably the most extensive background in the formation and the knowledge of those statutes of anybody in Alaska. That should be disclosed. The people should know about that because then you could look at Assembly Member X and understand and know that they are trying to create a city out there. So if there's disclosure, I don't have a problem. Do you have a problem if it's disclosed?
No, not if it's disclosed. But the other problem is I think it's pretty well known that the employers of one of the assembly members are very interested in the city. They've discussed it with a lot of people in the last year or two. That's what I've heard from a lot of people. So at some point, the assembly member may, and he may already be in that position if he's discussing this with people who work for him, like borough officials, there's an appearance of a conflict already. There's potential of another.
Yeah. There's disclosure.
So there needs to be disclosure, and there certainly will be a public process if and when this moves further. But we have a caller, so Why don't we take a call?
Caller, you're on the air.
Bob, Kyle, this is Van Abbott.
Good evening, Van.
Hello, Van.
Hi, Kyle. Bob, I've had an opportunity to look at and read the petition, and I guess I want to say that I personally think it's very poorly written petition. It's very contradictory. I'll go as far as saying it's disingenuous. But anyway, I thought I'd mention this, that anybody who's going to sign this petition that Trevor Shaw is going to be circulating here shortly, needs to carefully read the petition and know what they are signing, because when I read it, my taxes immediately are going to go up. Not a lot, but then I'm going to lose the benefit of our beautiful city library, most likely, because they're going to suspend the payment of the new city of Ward Cove once it's authorized. We'll suspend the payment to the borough that the borough turns over to the city to reimburse the city as part of the fee that it takes to run that library.
Do you remember what the petition says they're going to replace it with?
Yes. Initially, they're going to put a cubicle at the fire station that is linked electronically to the state library system.
Right. And Van, I want to say you're raising a very good point, because I think one of the drivers for this, aside from what I mentioned earlier, is at least one of the same assembly members who's involved with this try to defund the borough's non-area-wide contribution to the library, and due to extensive public comment, failed in that effort a couple times. That's what this does. And I think part of it, and based on comments that certain people made on radio or elsewhere, I think one of the central thrust of this is a backdoor defunding of the library so that people north of town do not contribute on a non-area-wide basis to the library, lose access to the library, even though there was extensive public comment and public meetings in the borough assembly as a whole. Rejected that approach. The other concern that's related to that is if it succeeds, this means a tax increase for city residents, because city residents will have to absorb 100% of the cost of a facility that currently serves everybody on the island. Kyle?
Well, I got lost there. I couldn't remember what I was going to say. You're very detailed, Bob. Very detailed. Again, going back to the big picture, just the fact that this area is looking at more government is a shock to me. And then the second part is, I can't imagine, I mean, the library issue might be frosting on the cake, but this is bigger than the library funding. I mean, this is about controlling the North End. This is about having a government in the vision of, in my opinion, the minority of the borough assembly that can't get anything passed. They want to load the deck out north so they can have a city and they can have their own vision. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, as long as it's done democratically.
Well, they can do that. And disclosure.
Well, except for if you look at the petition, and I'm sure you have, there's a strong mayor, former government, unlike the other mayors in this community. And that's fine. If people,
why do you think Southeast wants to secede from the state? Well, because why do you think Alaska wants to secede from the nation? Because we're in the minority, we can't get anything done. It's the same thing, right? Except they can do it. They have the vehicle to do it. It's a lot easier.
So it's not just a strong.
I have a question.
Wait,
Kyle,
go ahead.
Can I interrupt here?
Yep.
Kyle, why do you think they can do it when they're going to be more successful than the borough?
No. What I said was they can do it in relation to, we can't secede from the United States. The Alaska can't. That's never going to happen. Southeast is not going to secede from Alaska and be a 51st state, but they can, because the process is much easier. The people who want to create Ward Cove can accomplish that. I'm not saying they can accomplish what the borough can accomplish. I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, another couple of points I want to make, since we were talking about the petition, it's not only a strong mayor, former government, which is fine. It means the mayor runs things, but every employee serves at the pleasure of the mayor, every employee. So if you work for the fire department, he can fire you or she can fire you. They also have a 5-member council, unlike every other body that I'm aware of that takes a majority of the elected council or assembly to override the veto of the mayor. The proposed petition requires all 5, a unanimous vote of the city council to override the mayor, who can also not only veto ordinances and budgets, but has line item veto power, unlike any other mayor that I'm aware of.
Is there a blood lineage for secession? If the mayor gets put out of office out there, do you have to be? Right. Is it like a monarchy sort of a deal?
And the other thing, in addition to suspending "quote unquote" the library prorated tax that people up north pay on a population basis, to have any sales tax and to have any property tax, or to change it, not only requires a vote of the public, as it does now in the borough, and that's fine, it requires 2/3 approval. So supermajorities...
That's pretty tight. That's a pretty tight construction for a mayor.
And then finally, the mayor in this petition, and I don't know if any of the petitioners or people involved with this foresee themselves becoming mayor, because it's really stacked to have a king, a king of North Tongass, instead of democratically operating mayor.
Can you imagine, Bob, if those were the rules when you were the mayor of the city of Ketchikan?
Yeah.
There would be no fishing on that dock immediately.
But anyway, the mayor has the power to pardon anybody for any violation of the proposed city charter, any of the ordinances, and to commute sentences. So the mayor's the king, the judge. You know, maybe they'll call it King John the One or something. But in any case, and, you know, we have other subjects we want to talk about tonight. We'll get back to Van. But I'd like to end my comment by saying I want to publicly challenge the petitioner, Trevor Shaw, an elected official, to have a debate on the preliminary petition with me at the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce.
Wow.
I would like to
Bob
do
just
that.
Threw the gauntlet down.
He threw it down.
I think
did.
It would be helpful to
wow.
start having...
Really?
A public discussion of this so that everybody knows the details.
I
want
to know what
petition.
Van thinks of that idea. You think that's a good idea, Van, to have Bob and Trevor? I mean, just to get the information out there to talk about it.
I do. In fact, it should happen. I also talked to Mary Kaufman today and asked her to set up a forum and after the call, Trevor Shaw, to see if... they would respond to questions in a form that's on CIT News, because we all use CIT News. It's probably the most used site in Ketchikan, and she was looking into it. So I do hope that Trevor and the committee agree that if they will answer questions that is posed in that forum, then we all can get answers when we ask questions. But a debate... Surely we have a lot riding on this. If you look at the proposal, they're proposing they want 14 separate powers as a Class 1 city, including garbage, solid waste, sewer and septic, public utilities, motor vehicle registration, library, civic convention center, museums. Why in the world they want a museum? I don't know. Road construction maintenance. I find this is almost more powers than the city of Ketchikan has. I haven't laid them out against the city of Ketchikan, but they got road powers, construction maintenance of yeah. water treatment. The whole what's missing here, and a key cousin, is they have one of the nice. Ward Cove is one of the largest ports that doesn't freeze and is protected, and yet what's missing here is no port powers, port and harbors. Why would you put down museums as a power your city wants and not have ports and harbors? That's a key question. Anyway, I agree to answer your question, Dial. We ought to have a debate. Bob's all pumped up for it.
Yeah,
I would love to do that and answer questions that the chamber might have and do this in front of the media and really start getting some public information on this. Yeah. And that's my major concern with this, that I think it's bad public policy to secretly form a new government and get a petition into a state agency without vetting.
If you're elected, you should disclose. And then we should talk about Lisa Murkowski, that was the one you wanted to talk
about. Yeah, why don't we do that again?
Okay. Thanks, Van.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you for calling in. Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was interesting. And yeah. You'll see if...
No, that's good. I mean, it'll be interesting to watch how that unfolds. But I think there's a lot of questions. And I don't know. Here's before we go on and talk about Lisa and Planned Parenthood, Senator Murkowski, excuse me, and Planned Parenthood. I don't know the procedure for forming a city within a borough. Who has to vote? Is it just the people in the affected area? Does the city have to approve it? Does
well,
the
it
borough...
would be it would be just people in the affected city.
So they could say no one there's no negative vote from another body. Like well, when you annex, everybody has to vote for it, right?
No, there was not the city council voted for
one
consolidation
of them,
required right. a vote of everybody.
Okay.
I think if you merge service areas, you know, that requires votes of people in the service area and so on. But
so I could form Baden City, Baden Street City?
No.
Within the city? Within the borough?
I don't think you can form a city inside a city. I could be wrong.
We're going to find out.
You might be able to. But, you know, the other thing is there's a question as to whether or not a municipality can be formed within an existing borough if a service area or an existing city
so there might be
can
legal
provide the services.
This?
Well, I don't know. That's, there's a lot of questions. And
wow.
Yeah. But I think that this isn't just an issue for the people of North Tongass because of the library issue. It's an issue for you know, everybody.
Well, according to Van, the powers that museum, road, library, that's a lot of stuff. So another question that we could go on all hour about this, but I mean, so what? They're going to go to the state and ask for capital money, budget money to build a new library?
Well, who knows?
That's not going to
happen. But I think what's really going to happen is if there's a new city, the state will do what's in the regulations or statutes pertaining to that. They'll turn over whatever state services they can. So instead of state troopers, there'll be a police department out there.
That's true.
The roads will be maintained by people out there, not the state. I'm not talking about Tongass, but the offshoots, just like the city of Ketchikan. So I think they're masking a huge tax increase for the people out north.
Maybe they got it figured out.
It's possible. Maybe. It is.
Unlike our senior senator who, I don't know, this vote on Planned Parenthood, that's a primary vote for me.
Yeah.
She's running to the right, don't you think?
So what's your reaction?
Well, I mean, I think she's running to the right. She's threatened by Joe Miller, and she's threatened by basically the conservative wing of the party. And, you know, Senator Dunleavy is from the heart of Tea Party country in the Mat-Su Valley, the fastest growing area in the state. You get into a primary and she votes the wrong way on abortion, which is a real issue for this real conservative, strong Republicans. I mean, this vote, this Planned Parenthood deal, I wasn't shocked because politically that's what she should do, but she wouldn't vote that way in halfway through her term.
Right. Let's.
Do you think? Three years in.
Before we go into that, let's just briefly get the issue out. I think most listeners probably know, the Planned Parenthood has been attacked at various times by the Republican Party, who don't like the fact that in addition to preventative care for women, it does provide abortion services in some of its clinics without the use of federal funds. Federal funds are prohibited to be used for abortions, and nobody argues that they don't comply with that. An anti-abortion group went in to some of the clinics or affiliates or offices, secretly tape-recorded people. I haven't looked at the tapes, but I'm told by those who have that it's selectively edited. It would be like, Kyle, if you and I had a conversation and Deb taped it without us knowing, and then she leaves certain things
out.
Bob,
this is being taped, by the way,
right.
In case you weren't aware
but
of it.
But in any case.
They've all been taped.
So that provoked some outrage from the right, and there was an effort in the Senate to defund Planned Parenthood completely, not allow them to access any federal funds whatsoever. Well, the fact is, in 1992, the United States Senate, with Frank Murkowski and Ted Stevens voting in the affirmative on an 85-12, with three people missing, vote, voted to authorize the secretary to do research on fetal tissue, including from abortions and stillbirths. So back before that, the fetal tissue issue was a political football.
That's fine. It's done.
The Senate. But I'm just trying to give some background. It was not partisan. People understood what the purpose was, et cetera, et cetera. So then we got to last week, and there's a vote. Dan Sullivan announced in advance that he would vote to defund, and he voted for closure. Lisa Murkowski voted for closure. After the fact, she said and told, I think, this radio station or other news sources that her vote was an effort to get an amendment on the floor that would be considered. And I'm sure that, may be the case. That's what the purpose was. But what wasn't stated, and if you look at the amendment itself, and I'm not going to read it, but there's a question of what it would have done or would not have done if it had passed. But more importantly, there's a question of there was no guarantee that it would substitute for the main bill. So then the question becomes, what would Senator Murkowski have done if the amendment failed and there was a vote to defund? Would she have voted for it or would she have voted against it? And I understand, based on what you said, that there's people with strong opinions on both sides of that issue, and there's no way an elected official is going to please people on both
right.
sides.
But that's what it gets down to. That's what it gets down to is, and the Planned Parenthood issue, the details of that aside, focusing back on Alaska and our race for the Senate, why did she do it? Because she had to move to the right, correct?
Well, that's certainly an interpretation, but then her explanation was,
I wasn't really supporting defunding. It's what she did.
Right.
It's the vote. And you can't put here's the deal, Bob, and you know this, you can't put an explanation on a flyer, but you can put, I voted no on this. I voted against abortion in a targeted mailer in the Republican primary. That's why this is happening. She wouldn't have done this 3 years into it, because she'd have 3 years until the next election, people would forget.
Well, I respectfully disagree with you, because in 2012, Kyle, she voted for the Blunt Amendment, if you remember, which was a proposal in Congress that would have allowed any employer to say, I don't want my insurance to cover contraception for women.
Well, those are amendments in different circumstances, right, on different bills with different variables. So, I mean, we're talking about this one.
Right, but the point I'm getting to, because you said she wouldn't do that in the middle of a term.
I don't think she would.
Well, she did, but she also got such significant blowback from women, a lot of women who did not agree with her proposal, to the point that she said she regretted her vote in that case. So now we have this hot potato issue. Nobody really knows. I mean, and that's the unfortunate part of this. Nobody has shown that Planned Parenthood broke any laws, and yet the U.S. Senate is ready to defund. And to finish, in Alaska, there is no tissue donations by Planned Parenthood. And the federal money that they get through for their services is solely used for preventative health for women, especially including low-income women who have trouble accessing other places. So I think you also have to look at what's really going on in our state. Is this an issue here? As well as looking at it on a national level. But yeah, I mean, she's sort of in a pickle on this, and I think from what I've seen and heard, people who are strong on one side disagree with what's occurred, and I think people on the right, from what I've seen, are very upset because they're not sure if she would have voted to defund Planned Parenthood or not.
Right, and that's part of the feedback that I've been getting, is a lot of the conservatives, and some of them probably out there listening, they don't buy it. They don't buy her moving over to vote this way. It hasn't convinced a lot of people. They're saying, people are getting savvy. You know, with the immediate feedback of Twitter and Facebook and the news cycle, people are a lot more savvy about politics than they used to be. And I think they can see, and I don't think she's convinced a lot of people on this move. Huh. I think it's going to be an interesting primary for her.
And since we talked about the primary last time, do you think that if she has a primary opponent, the primary opponent will make an issue out of this?
I would imagine. Well, I mean, she's going to be on her entire record on this is going to be on there. I mean, she'll try to spin it to be doing the right thing for the conservative, but they'll bring out her full record. And I think that the information will get out there and it'll trend. And I think people will understand, not enough to make a difference. Don't get me wrong. I don't think she's going to lose. Don't get me wrong. I think Lisa's going to be the senator again, but it's going to be uncomfortable. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
Okay, well, let's take a little break and listen to a few messages, and we'll be right back. You are listening to KRBD's Politics Now.
It's election season in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. If you are a borough resident and a qualified borough voter, consider running for the borough assembly or school board. There are 2 3-year terms open on the borough assembly and 3 3-year terms available on the school board. For more information about candidate qualifications or how to obtain the filing forms, contact the borough clerk's office or visit the elections page on the borough website. The filing deadline is August 25th at 5 p.m. You can make a difference in our community. Consider running for election to the borough assembly or school board.
It's the end of the trail for Lloyd Gossman. Taking pledges to raise money for First City Council on Cancer, Lloyd and Wilson, his gear cart, set out from Independence, Missouri on April 27th to walk the Oregon Trail. 2,250 miles later, they are now nearing Oregon City. Come and walk with them on the final leg into town, 10 a.m. Saturday, August 15th, from the Coast Guard base to the Plaza Mall, where congratulations and refreshments await. Celebrate Lloyd's amazing journey and support the First City Council on Cancer.
Hey, we are Boston's own Ball in the House, and you are listening to KRBD Ketchikan.
Are you ready to kick up your heels, have some fun, and support a great cause? The Dale Curtis Big Band is back for another Big Band Bash, starring Frank DeSalvo and featuring some of your favorite Ketchikan divas. The dance floor will be out with the no-host bar on August 15th. Doors open at 7:30. Show begins at 8 o'clock. Tickets available by calling 225-4792 or at firstcityplayers.org. All proceeds to benefit your First City Players. Hope to see you there.
And we are back.
In black?
Back in black. And friends. We're still friends, right?
Oh,
it's all good.
Always. This
is politics. Except for that black eye I have, you know.
So, Bob, you watched the debate. We haven't been on since the debate. Oh, are we going to do this one first?
Do we want to take care of the question that came in?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
We'll go to Trump because Bob has some more research to do. He's been thoroughly beaten the first half of the hour, and he needs an extra time to get some Trump quotes. So we got an anonymous question. I don't know if it's emailed or called in. And this is it. Are we missing the mark by not taxing marijuana rather than another cigarette tax? What are your views on taxing marijuana? Do you think MJ will be sold in the city or will you have to go to the borough? Bob, what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I want to say that the city is in the borough because sometimes people think borough means outside of the city, and every bit of borough resident as somebody who lives outside. But having said that, you know, from what I've seen, reading the paper, listening to the radio, that, you know, there's that committee that's been talking about it, and so far they've been pretty much hands off. Let's wait to see what the state does. The people voted for this. But the bottom line is, if marijuana is sold in the city, in the borough, on this island, legally, I expect that there will be a tax. I mean, I can't see how there can be taxes on alcohol and tobacco and there will not be taxes on marijuana. In fact, I think that was one of the promoters of the initiative talked about that this would or could generate some revenue for local communities.
If anybody thinks those two governing bodies are not going to tax something, I mean, seriously. Of course it's going to get taxed. Everything gets taxed. Yeah, it's going to get taxed like crazy. Whether the borough or city allow it, they have to decide whether to allow it within their boundaries. And they're waiting for the state. The state has regulations that have been let out. There's a new marijuana board, and they're going through the regulation process right now. So we don't even know what the laws are yet. I think I heard something on KRBD the other day about clubs. A lot of people up in Anchorage have already opened clubs or are waiting to open clubs. And the law now, or the regulation now, says no clubs are allowed in Alaska. So we don't even know what we would be accepting if we said yes. So like you said, everyone's just kind of waiting. That local board is kind of kicking back and waiting for the state to finalize their stuff. But the big question is going to be, whatever the details are you going to allow commercial operation inside the city, yes or no? And the borough is going to have to make the same determination, right? I think some people have said there's some legal gray area, whether if the borough says no, that would force the city, but I think that's a red herring.
So I believe the question was, what are your views?
What are my views? Yeah, they're going to tax them.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think they'll tax them.
Yeah, for sure.
Given the opportunity, I mean, look at what they're doing with cigarette taxes. So, yeah.
I don't know if it should be rather than a cigarette tax because, you know, I mean, I'm not a real big taxing purpose anyway. It's a sin tax, but the numbers are dropping because smoking is dropping. So, I don't know. Interesting. Indeed.
So why don't we talk about the debate,
and
then we'll come back to this question. We had a wonderful debate with, at least there were two tiers, but the 9 o'clock version had 10 Republican candidates for president, and it was very interesting, especially the leading in the polls candidate, Donald Trump. And so... what do you think? How did Trump do? How do you think some of the other candidates did?
You know, I didn't watch the debate. I did not watch it.
Well, I should have invited you to my party.
Yeah, I heard you had a bash up on the hill up there.
You could have played bingo.
Played bingo? Were you guys playing bingo up there?
Yeah.
Was that one of the games associated with?
Yeah, every time Benghazi came up or some other key phrase, you got to put an X in your box.
You know, I am fascinated by this. Being a political junkie, watching this happen is fascinating to me. And I just read, it was in the paper the other day, an editorial from Pat Buchanan. I don't know if you read that. Did you read that in the paper?
I saw something, but
it's interesting. You should read it. I don't know if you read it either, Deb, but it was really interesting. He was talking about how he believes... you know, Trump is an obvious showman, and he's obviously playing to the crowd, fanning the flames a little bit. But his point was the lack of any other Republican to break away from this mesmerizing on Trump. Nobody else has the charisma or the message to break out of what's happening. And Trump is controlling everything, basically. I mean, I think it was Rubio or Cruz or somebody started talking about Trump because he said that's the only way I'm going to get in the news.
That was Bobby Jindal. Jindal said, I'm going to randomly say Donald Trump whenever I'm speaking.
And put Trump on all his tweets because that's the only way anybody's getting attention.
Right.
So it's really interesting to me, and also because of the pressure that it's putting on the structure of the party.
So let's back up. A couple of weeks ago, you questioned whether or not Donald Trump was a viable candidate, wondering, has that changed? But more importantly, at the debate, as we all know, he responded to a question posed by Megyn Kelly, and his answer was to the effect that she has blood coming out of her ears
and
elsewhere. That was interpreted as she was having her period.
Donald Trump said it perfectly, and this is why he wins. This is why he wins.
Okay.
He says, whoever would think like that is a deviant. Why do people go there? Why do people assign that to what he has to say? It's ridiculous.
Right, but the next...
Because it makes him look worse. And not to mention the whole story about Fox News going, and that's part of Pat Buchanan's piece as well, Fox News going after Trump. They didn't moderate the debate. They were pointing their guns at one individual. And that was his other issue, was that a news organization that is so powerful and so seen all around the world did not moderate a debate as, I mean, geez, the people who used to moderate debates back in the old days, the real professional, the Edward R. Murrow type of people, they would roll over in their grave if they saw that. The way that those people, quote, moderated the debate, it was an attack. It was no moderation, and that's why I think it was a joke.
Well, certainly.
And he survived, and his poll numbers are going up. So right. What does that tell you?
So I don't know. I mean, and, you know, everything I look at, you know, that night, speaking of Twitter and your other social media things that I still have a hard time understanding because I'm so old, all of them said, oh, he just did himself in. The other candidates, Democrats, Republicans, said, oh, he's terrible for saying this. He was disinvited by Eric Erickson, Red State, whatever it is, at the convention they were having the next day, conservatives. Disinvited, even though Eric Erickson, if you look at his record for statements about women, he should never criticize anybody for being anti-woman. But in any case, the result today, Trump holds solid lead in Iowa. Trump up in New Hampshire. Rand Paul, who is sinking, as we know, has taken ads out. And guess what they are? Attacking Donald Trump. He's the front runner wherever he goes. Jesse Ventura today said, I hope that Donald Trump considers me to be a running mate. I mean, that might appeal to people. Can you imagine a Trump-Ventura ticket? But my view of the debate is, especially Megyn Kelly, when she mentioned things that he had said on the air, calling people names or talking about somebody on her knees or blah, 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 that's reality show or the TV version of talk radio. He's doing that for ratings. So she asks him a question, and he makes his quip, no, that's only Rosie O'Donnell. But the point is, from my perspective, he's treating the campaign. It's his own rules. His own way of doing it. And it's a reality.
You know what he
show.
Figured out? He figured out, I think, more people vote nightly for Dancing with the Stars, for that other show, the singer, the voice. More people vote nightly for that than people vote in a presidential election.
Right.
And he is touching that nerve of people who, it's a fast, it's the tweet, it's the Facebook, it's the meme, it's the funny, crazy, maybe a little red, maybe a little makes you feel a little uncomfortable, but that's what's going on in the world right now. That's what America is doing right now, and Trump is...
Well, even to the point, okay, Fox sponsors his first debate. They had a selection process that seemed on the surface fair, you know, the top 10 in the polls, averaging whatever, and I haven't heard much disagreement about that. But there's this big reaction against him. Apparently, Fox starts getting deluged with emails from pro-Trump people to the point that apparently Roger Ailes called Donald Trump. They made peace. Donald Trump was on Fox, I think, yesterday. The subject of the debate or his controversial comments, do you think they came up?
No, they didn't
come up. So I think they both realize, Fox realizes Trump is very good for their ratings. I mean, they had 500 billion people watching the debates, or whatever it was, 24 million, 63 mm-hmm. yeah. million watching the debates. Huge crowd, huge spike in their ratings.
And 4 years earlier, they had 4 million, and it went up to 24.
Right. And Trump realizes Fox News is good for him. So it's this mutually beneficial relationship, and they're going to cut him some slack. And, you know, and so are the voters so far.
And you don't want to know the cherry on top as the phone rings in the background?
Go ahead.
The Alaska Republicans. I tweeted this out earlier. The Alaska Republicans voted in... Who should be the Republican nominee was sent only to this exclusive must-read Alaska email list. All Republicans, this is basically an email poll. Donald Trump wins the Alaska Republican Party.
Really?
And they opened it up to Facebook, and it increased from 19% to 23%. And I think it's kind of interesting because our Alaska Republican Party, they proclaimed in a fundraiser that they were going to raise $10,000 and it was going to go to the Republican nominee for president. I think it would be pretty interesting if Trump wins the nominee to see if our guys up north actually write a $10,000 check to Donald Trump. Maybe they would.
Maybe they will.
I don't know.
All for one and one for all.
I wonder if our local Republican chair is raising money for Donald Trump.
One can only hope so.
Well, when
they
you
should be.
When you call him and talk to him about Ward Cove, because Trevor Shaw is the Republican chair of the Republican Party,
oh.
Maybe you can kill two birds with one stone. Ask him about Donald Trump, and ask him about.
I think I'll just stick to the one subject, but I could ask him privately.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got some calls coming in, so let me go through. We got one clarification first before we get on.
Okay,
this
and
call.
You want to talk about SEPA, so
let's
reserve some time for that.
All right.
So why don't we take the call that's come in?
Okay. What's the call?
I was going to try and make this guy wait, but that's okay. I don't even know who it is. Yeah, let's take the person on the phone. That's logical.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hello?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Hey, my question is for both Bob and Kyle. Hopefully you guys can shed some light on my question here. I read recently that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, I guess, upheld the roadless rule for all the logging in Southeast. And then I saw something in the newspaper the other day that it might go to the Supreme Court. And I was just wondering what you guys thought about that, if you really think it will go to the Supreme Court, or do you think they'll just let it go by the wayside and let the trees keep growing?
Hmm. Well, I'll give an answer. Let's, Kyle, you want
go
to
ahead.
Take that?
Go ahead. No, I'll have mine. It's probably
well, first
the
of all, very
one.
Briefly, regarding the roadless rule, I have a long history with it, going back to when it was first proposed. I'll say, in my opinion, it was very inappropriate to be applied to the Tongass National Forest because the Tongass had completed a $25 million planning with the best science called the Tongass Land Management Plan and initially was excluded from the roadless rule. It's basically...
It was peace in the valley is what the environmentalists said.
Basically cookie-cutter federal regulation. You know, might have been good for somewhere down south, but I don't think it should have been applied here. Having said that, regarding the Supreme Court, you know, who knows? The state's attorney general have to take a look at that, decide what the chances are, what the expense is. They might do it, but there's no guarantee, of course, that the Supreme Court would actually accept it as a case. But if there's some theory that some legal minds have that there's a chance of it not only getting accepted, but overturning the Ninth Circuit, then it's certainly something that should be examined.
Well, I think the governor has to, politically. He has to. It's not going to cost him anything. I mean, the attorneys in the Department of Law are going to get up and go to work anyway. So why not give him something to eat, chew on, right? So this is a big one. I mean, if the governor doesn't take this to the Supreme Court, then he has to come to Ketchikan, not Juneau, because they don't cut any trees down up there. Ketchikan, Sitka, Prince of Wales. He has to come and look us in the eye and say, no, I didn't fight to the ultimate end. And try to defend Alaska. He has to do it. Your point of whether they take it or not is the tough one. But I think they have to take it. I believe it was appealed because of, and I'm not sure, it's been so long since I've looked at it, but I believe it was the point, the legal points are not about the science of the timber. I believe it's about the administrative actions, isn't it? Or...
I don't know what the whole legal
yeah, I can't remember what it is. But the bottom line, I think, is that the governor has to do it, and then it's up to the Supremes to see if they take it.
Okay, is that a good enough answer?
Very interesting. No, that's perfect. I really appreciate you guys taking my call. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Now, the other one was caller looked for clarification about Prince of Wales and annexation. Does Prince of Wales need to be a taxing borough to avoid annexation by Ketchikan or just a borough? And is it possible with Prince of Wales status now? Is Ketchikan a threat? I think if POW is a borough, it's more difficult for another borough to take away from a borough. I mean, I can't imagine. Plus, you go back to there's things called model borough boundaries, and it's geographical, it's population, it's cultural. And Prince of Wales is a geographical perfect borough. I don't think that Ketchikan could get part of it if they try it.
Well, and then you have the whole school issue, and you know, there's remote schools there and small schools. Does the borough really? Yeah. But and then that question, could it be a borough or a taxing borough? I think by definition, if it's a borough, it has some taxing authority, right, especially for schools and whatever the mandatory powers are currently.
So hopefully that clarifies. And if not, call the local boundary commission. Those people will talk to you. If you call them, they'll let you talk to a staff member. And they're really good about helping people understand. Yeah. Call your senator or your representative. They'll get you the number. Or call... Call the LIO.
Okay. Well, you wanted to bring up SEPA.
Yeah, I did. I want to talk about SEPA because I know the city council is having some turnover, and that's always interesting for the election, and this is always a question. And I was thinking back about SEPA and the intertie about before we had an intertie. I think you were mayor at the time, weren't you?
Mayor, and I was on and chair of the 4DM pool and SEPA. Until 2009, but go
now
ahead.
You might not remember this the same way I do, but I remember when we were working to get money for that intertie. Bill Williams, Jim Elkins, during those times, that the story always was when we get this thing finished, one of two things is going to happen. And I remember writing press releases from my boss about this, and I remember the city talking about this, and the politicians during the elections. One of two things was going to happen. We were going to build the intertie, and either one, our rates were going to go down, or two, the debt service was going to be decreased, therefore getting us to a better place quicker where we don't owe so much money. Therefore, hopefully our rates would go down again. Either way, building it and connecting was going to benefit the consumer. And I don't think either one of those has happened. And I'm just curious. I don't know enough about it, but what I do know is I read in the paper things like, lots of consultants and studies, and I just don't know. I don't understand what happened between then and now. And are we spending too much? I mean, does anybody really know how much is going on in SEPA, how much money is being spent? Does anybody? I don't know. I have no idea.
Well,
city council members are supposed to.
Number one, SEPA's books are open. There's, I think, three, always two, and in alternate years, three Ketchikan City Council members on it, and either council members or electric utility people from Petersburg and Wrangell. So they get audited every year. Their books.
Right. I'm sure there's nothing crooked going. I'm not saying there's something crooked.
Yeah,
it's a political decision. Why don't we? Why doesn't the policy say instead of doing? Here's a solid example.
Okay.
So the state of Alaska, with Sean Parnell as governor, spent a whole bunch of money to inventory all of the hydro sites in Southeast Alaska.
Okay.
And then I think it was last year, there's a big announcement from SEPA saying, hey, we got an idea. We're going to inventory all the hydro sites in Southeast Alaska.
I think it's the same money, but I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think it is. And so I'm wondering, why would we do things like that? And there's many more examples. I'm just curious. I don't understand why, when the deal was we were going to build this intertie, the rates were going to go down or debt service was going to be accelerated. Retirement, and none of that seems to be happening. There seems to be a lot of consultants flying around.
Okay, well, let me talk about that a little bit. I was chair of 4DM Pool and then the first chair of the SEPA board when I was mayor, and I have not been involved since 2009, so I'm not current on what they're doing or what their finances are, but it was a very good deal for us to break off from the 4DM Pool.
You're the guy I'm looking for.
And,
you remember the answer a long time ago.
And it was a very good deal to form SEPA and have a regional power authority and connect with a lot of state money, the two dams, so surplus power largely from Taiyi could come down here and help stabilize rates. At least initially, and again, I don't know what the current status is, but it was a very good deal for the ratepayers of Southern Southeast. SEPA was, maybe still is, a cash cow. And in terms of rates, the wholesale power rate, I can't remember if it's 6.3 or 6.8% cents. It has been that for years. So it's not gone up, unlike our water fees, our you know, sewer fees. They're talking about raising garbage fees.
Yeah, but we knew that when those promises were made to lower rates, we knew that our rates were good.
Let me finish. We had a debate. Should we lower rates to reflect the absolute needs of the budget that we're adopting that year? Because you can cost it out. How much per kilowatt do you have to charge to fund the budget? Or do you keep the rate constant, but at the end of every year, after your audit, look at your surplus revenues and rebate the maximum amount back to the utilities? I advocated and prevailed on the latter. And the intent was to say, hey, if they made a bunch of money well above their needs and the R&R funds and the funds that they really need, the reserve funds, it goes back to the ratepayers. I don't know what the
history.
I don't know what the history of that has been.
That's the crux.
But in that sense,
who decides whether it goes? It's really important to the ratepayers.
Well, the board does. But it's obviously important that since every community is represented, and while there's a fiduciary responsibility, SEPA board members, they also have fiduciary responsibilities as council members and others.
That's the chicken and egg question. The chicken and egg question. And this is what I would like. This is if I could get anything that I would like out of this entire city council. We have 2 minutes left, right? Out of this entire city council debate. I would like somebody to ask the candidate, because a couple of them are running for re-election, have been there for a long time, and they've been on the SEPA board, and they've been active in this. My favorite question to ask a couple of these people is, are you a city council member when you're sitting on the SEPA board? Do you take your city council hat? Because we send you up there to represent Ketchikan, and then when people go up to the SEPA board, and I've asked them before directly, and they say, well, when I'm up there with SEPA, I'm not really representing Ketchikan. I'm part of SEPA. And it's like, no, you are Ketchikan's representative there.
Right.
No, but I'm part of the SEPA board, and I have a bigger responsibility. Come on.
Right. Well, that gets back to what I was saying earlier.
I think
earlier.
These need to be vetted during the election.
They're told, we are told when we become board members or council members, you have a fiduciary responsibility. You have to treat, you know, the agency well. And I think perhaps some people misinterpret that to mean they can never.
Yeah.
For example, I'll exaggerate. Let's say they had $400 million in cash sitting around. Let's just say they had that. They don't. But if they did, should that be returned to the ratepayers who paid it?
Right. Yes. That's the bottom line question.
Yes, it should.
And I just want one more thing. Did you actually say SEPA is a cash cow?
I did. I said it was. I don't know what the it made a lot.
Well, it's probably not making cash since you left.
It made a lot of money in excess of budgeted needs.
Wow.
But in any case,
good to know.
Okay.
I think there may be a
cash cow.
There needs to be a balance.
Sleep is a cash cow.
We're going to leave you with that thought. We thank you for tuning in this evening. We thank Bob and Kyle. Thanks, Stuart White, for answering the phones, and everyone who called in and is listening. Next up is Wednesday's Rockin' Blues.